Hello and welcome back to Let's Grow Girls, our little flowery section of the internet.
Oh, and I have to say it smells pretty great around here, especially actually with the topic on today's agenda, which is sweet peas.
Well, I don't know about you, Sarah, but I am excited for today's episode. I absolutely love sweet peas.
And so do I, yeah.
I'm just so excited to learn loads more with our special guest that we've got on today's show.
He's not a special guest, he's the king.
The king of sweet peas. Mm. I think we've really excelled ourselves with guest choice this week.
So we've already technically done the interview before we record this intro, but I think it might be the best one yet. God, that man is full of such wisdom.
It really was. I think our guests are waiting with bated breath to find out who it's going to be. But before we reveal all, what do we have, Sarah? Something very special for the listeners.
Yes. We have Sarah's history corner.
Is that what we're calling it? The history
Sarah's
corner?
Sarah's history section? Does that work?
Maybe we should get answers on a postcard. What should we call Sarah's history section?
And I think I might have a jingle. You know, it'll go like, do, 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 do. Sarah does history. Do, 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 do. No?
let's move on swiftly. Hit me with history lesson number one.
Sweet peas were first sent to the UK by a monk named Franciscus Cupani. Can you guess when? Pop quiz. With one question.
Quiz, a long time ago.
Well, that's a rubbish answer. The 1600s. And then a man named Henry Eckford appeared on the scene in the 1800 and transformed sweet peas from a little-known species into the powerhouse it is now. So we have Eckford to thank for our sweet pea love. So Eckford's creation and the varieties we now refer to as grandiflora, which in this interview Roger calls multiflora, named so because they were bigger, better, and had a stronger scent than the varieties that preceded them. They are also sometimes referred to as heirloom sweet peas. Eckford then passed on the baton of sweet pea love and breeding to Silas Cole, a gardener working for the Spencer family, who we all know of Diana, Princess of Wales fame. Yes?
Mm.
Mm. In 1900, he was chuffed, according to the internet, that was the exact word, chuffed, when one of his plants threw up an even bigger flower with a wavy petal edge. He named that specific plant Countess Spencer. And then this variety and that subsection are known as the Spencers, which are your favourite, aren't they?
They are. And I always wondered where, like, the name Spencer came from, because I know it's not an uncommon surname, but obviously Diana Spencer's the most famous one. And I did wonder if there was some link. So well done on your history lesson. You finally found a fact I didn't already know.
I should have done it as a pop quiz. Damn it. You would have lost, finally. So tell us, who's our expert? Go on, Nicole.
It's Roger Parsons. I'm so excited. Oh. I know we've already done the interview and this is a bit of a cheat, but for anyone who's listening who doesn't know, Roger is like the don of sweet pea growing in the UK. He's just such a wealth of knowledge. I mean, he is quite self-deprecating, but I think we can big him up, can't we?
Getting to pick his brains was truly fascinating. So I think, should we just intro right in? Let's go.
I think let's just crack on.
Yeah, let's grow, girls. Right, so hello, Roger. Welcome.
Hello, nice to be here with you.
So, just to give you a bit of background, in March 2012, Roger was awarded the prestigious Henry Eckford Gold Memorial Medal, and he has been the custodian of the National Collection of Lathyrus Species for 27 years. So, if there's something to know about sweet peas, Roger's the man, would you say?
I'd say legend in the sweet pea world. Is that how you're addressed at home, Roger?
I feel I've only been growing sweet peas for 35 years, so I'm still learning, and it's one of those things that you know, I hate it when people refer to me as some sort of expert, because I might be a specialist, but actually I still keep learning new things about sweet peas, and that's part of the joy of growing them for me.
How did you get into sweet peas? How did you discover your love for them?
Through local flower shows. I used to show all sorts of things when I think I've been growing about 35 years now, and I used to exhibit all sorts of things. But I lived in I was living in Wiltshire at the time, and had they had in our local show a great many sweet pea classes, and I was absolutely fascinated by these, above all of the flowers, because they were, to get to a very good standard, they were quite tricky. They weren't straightforward. A lot of things you could just cut from the garden, plonk them on the show bench, and hopefully get a prize. The sweet peas weren't like that. You really had to put a bit of effort in if you wanted to get lovely long stems and, you know, the flowers, and there was just something about the appearance of the flowers that was so attractive. You know, they're kind of elegant flowers. They have a delicacy to them. So just the way the flowers are held on the stems, and the poise of them, if you like, is attractive. Wonderful range of colours, and of course. That wonderful fragrance, you know. So I over the first few years, I was gradually growing more and more sweet peas and less of anything else, and so it's been for about 30 years now.
Do you remember the first variety you ever grew, or is that too much to ask?
Well, I actually remember growing sweet peas as a child, would you believe?
Oh, that's lovely.
My mother taking me to Woolworths and buying a collection of varieties from there. So we had varieties like Swan Lake and Mrs. R. Bolton. Winston Churchill was another one. And some of these varieties I still have. I don't grow them very often. They've been, if you like, superseded by better varieties now, but yet we still have them. So I do remember growing those, and there was a funny thing, because nobody in our family were gardeners, so I was given free rein in our garden at home, and I remember growing these plants, but I didn't realise. Don't know how old I was, 10 or 12. I didn't realise that you had to deadhead them. So the plants went to seed. And the following year, they started coming up again. They'd self-seeded. So so that was wonderful. But what I noticed was that a couple of the colours had disappeared, and about half of them were pink. So which was the Mrs. R. Bolton. So that was an interesting experience that I still remember, and it was a time when I, you know, as a child, I used to enjoy saving seeds from things, and I still do.
It sort of sounds like you didn't choose sweet peas, they chose you. That's what it sounds like.
Yeah, maybe they did. That's a good point.
Maybe.
I think a lot of people have got quite a lot of nostalgia for sweet peas, actually. When this is only my second year growing them, and when I posted pictures of them on Instagram, I had so many people message me to say it reminded them of their mothers or their grandmothers, and they'd grown them together with them, which I just thought was such a lovely reason to carry on growing them.
Yeah, that's absolutely right. Because I have the National Collection, and I'm conserving varieties that probably nobody else in the world has got anymore. It's just seeds sitting in the seed bank. I'm actually contacted now by people whose grandparents raised varieties, and they want varieties that were maybe named for them as a child, or just to grow varieties that they're, you know, the grandfather bred.
That's lovely. You must get quite a thrill out of saying, well, actually, I just so happen to have that variety.
Yeah. Well, I can be fairly confident that if I don't have it, nobody else would have it. I've spent the last 22 years scouring the world for sweet peas, and if it exists, I should have it here, even if I haven't necessarily got seed available of all of them to be able to pass on to other people.
How many varieties do you have?
Well, I'm not sure exactly, but it's about 13.
What?
Yeah. we don't grow them all every year, though. We grow, I would say, about 180, something like that, this year. I was just doing my sewing last week, and the popular ones tend to be long-stemmed Spencer type, because they're so good for cutting. So things like Gwendolyn, Anniversary, Just Julia are probably our three.
And so would those be your recommendations then? Because we had a few listeners wanting to know what your recommendations would be for sweet peas with the longest stems and the best fragrance. Would those be the same?
There's a trade-off. If the ones with the longest stems don't have the best fragrance, the ones with the best fragrance have short stems. If you want long stems for cutting, there are some of the Spencer type which have better fragrance than others. So
Anniversary is,
is one of those.
It's I grew that one last year myself.
Yeah, I'm not surprised. It's ever so popular and one of my favourites. It's not my very favourite, but it's one of them. Eclipse, which is a deep mauve colour, that's got very good fragrance. The ones to avoid really are the scarlets and the orange reds. They, on the whole, they tend to not have terribly good.
Oh, that's that's unusual to know. I grew Happy Birthday last year, and it had lovely stems, but it didn't actually smell as nice as some of the others.
Yeah. There's one in that colour called Lisbeth, so that might be worth trying. That has very good scent. And I fancy, I don't know if this is true, but I fancy it's got a slightly more lemony fragrance to some of the other varieties.
Lisbon is an interesting one to try then.
Yes, I think so, yes. It's not the most popular, but I think it's underrated. Ooh, yeah.
That's exciting. I'm still gathering my varieties to sow now, so I'm going to add those to the list, I think.
Well, it's not too late to be
There we go.
Sowing.
It is sweet pea season. Would you say, so what are the benefits then of sowing now instead of in the spring?
Well, this is an argument that's often presented as an either or. You either sow in the autumn or you sow in the spring. And it's not really like that. You can sow any time between the beginning of October and the end of February and get equally good results. The advantage of sowing in October is that they will germinate quite happily outside here. And in probably in the, up to the Midlands as well in England and on the south coast of England. So, you know, we do have quite a mild location. Whereas once you get into November, you know, if people are thinking, well, it's a bit late now. Why are you telling me this now? You know, once you get into November through the winter, you can sow at any time. But because the nights are that bit colder, they just need a little bit of warmth to help with the germination. Don't try and force them, don't give them much heat, just make sure it's not too cold at night.
So do you think maybe bringing them onto the kitchen table till they've germinated is a good idea, or would you avoid that?
It can be. I mean, I although I do my main sowing in October outside, I tend to do a second sowing at the beginning of January, and I actually do that in the office here, and because it's nice and warm at night. Then as soon as they start, well, you have to be careful, as soon as they start poking through, then you need to move them out into a cold greenhouse or polytunnel or cold frame, whatever.
They start to look for the light, don't they, then?
They do. And light's important. You know, the idea of sowing in the autumn isn't for everybody. Mm-hmm. It's fine in the south of England, in the Midlands, and, you know, if you're in Wales, the equivalent areas. But if you were in the north of England, I wouldn't sow until January time. And in fact, Scotland, mm-hmm. I probably wouldn't sow until February. I'm not sure whether Northern Ireland would count as Scotland or Northern England in terms of latitude, but you get the picture. It's the winter light levels are important.
So it's the light, not the cold.
It's not the cold, no. If you were to sow in Scotland now, you really probably need some supplementary lighting to see them through the winter.
Actually,
there are many old Scottish growers who told me that the traditional date for sowing sweet peas up there is the 14th of February. So love your sweet peas.
There we go, yeah. Who needs a date when you've got sweet peas?
Yeah. Well, absolutely.
What are the benefits of doing the two sowings? You mentioned you do one in October and then one in January. Does that extend your season or...?
No, it doesn't. And I'm growing primarily for seed production nowadays in order to conserve varieties and to be able to sell seed to people. So I'm not interested in extending the season. It's simply because some varieties have maybe decided late to sow, or like the dwarf ones, for instance. I find they seem to fare better for me if sown then rather than in the autumn. So, you know, for most sweet peas, yes, I would be aiming 98%. I'd be aiming to be sowing in October.
That was one of our listener questions about succession sowing, and I didn't think sweet peas were really a succession sowing type of plant, like say snapdragons or something like that, that benefits from a second sowing. Is that correct, or?
It is to some extent. If I were to sow again in January, I'd be disappointed in terms of getting a succession of flowering. You know, there wouldn't be that much difference between. October, January, February. If I were to then sow in sort of March or April, well, yes, I would get a degree of succession, and maybe even early May if you wanted to be sure of having blooms in August, September time. The problem with sowing in March or later is that it's difficult to get such good stem length as if they've had a longer growing period. Mm-hmm. So,
will it overall be a shorter plant?
In terms of the height of the plant, it probably would be, but more importantly, you wouldn't have such long stem lengths, and you probably wouldn't get as long a flowering period either. My experience of growing them later came about when my daughter got married about 10 years ago in August, and announced that she wanted sweet peas for her. Well, I'm normally harvesting seeds in July and August.
Oh, wow.
So I tinkered around with it to as to how I could achieve this. Mm-hmm. I actually sowed a little bit too early. I think if I'd sown April, even early May, that would have been better. But the problem is that the plants want to start flowering before they've made sufficient vegetative growth to give you the strength to produce long stems. So the way to overcome that is, apart from keeping the plants well watered throughout the hot, dry summer, is that I prevented them from flowering. Just as the flower buds start to form in the growing tip of the plant, I would rub them out until the end of July. So all the plant's energy is going into growing the plant, making vegetative growth, and it's only about 2 weeks before I wanted to cut that I let them have their head, and then we got a profusion of bloom. They weren't as long as they were long enough, but they weren't great.
She got some sweet peas for a wedding, though.
We got some sweet peas for the wedding. Absolutely, you know. The one thing that any of your listeners who grow sweet peas will know that they might start off with lovely long stems, and as the season progresses, they get shorter and shorter. That's really due to sort of temperature and rainfall, or lack of, if you like. You know that. So the more you can water them, the better they will keep stem length. You can even, as they start to shorten up, you can even give them sort of plenty of water so that they will start lengthening again. Because I've never been a cut flower grower, but I talk to many people who are, and you know, the one thing they all seem to say is stem length is key.
It is king. Are there any specific varieties you'd say that do better growing later in the season, or is it whichever ones you like, you just have to sort of work around them?
I think it is whichever ones you like, but one thing we haven't touched on yet is the fact that if you are growing for cut flowers, then consider the multiflora, semi-multiflora varieties. So the Spencers, lovely though they are, however well you grow them, you don't tend to get more than four flowers on a stem. You know, they've generally been bred by amateur raisers who are producing varieties for the show bench. And so in order to succeed at flower shows, you want a nice uniform vase of four flowers on the stem. However, if you have, a true multiflora variety has 7, 8, maybe 9 flowers on a stem, but they're often a bit, they're not quite as elegant as the Spencers. But the advantage of having more flowers on a stem is you do tend to get a longer vase life, and even if you've grown them for garden decoration, you get more blooms from each stem if they have
more bang for your buck.
Okay, that's true. Yeah, showing my age now, I'm not coming up with expressions like that. But the ideal for me, there are some varieties which have about 5 or 6 flowers on the stem. So so they have the flower size and the placement along the flower stem of a Spencer variety, but you get the benefit of a slightly longer vase life without having the coarseness of the true multifloras, which tend to have smaller flowers and ugly gaps between the blooms.
Which ones do you think are the nice multiflora ones then?
I try to say with descriptions in catalogue, on my catalogue on the website, you know, how many flowers on the stem you get. So you're looking for something with 5 or 6. I do a mixture called the bouquet mixture, which not only has 5 or 6 flowers on the stem, but there is to some extent a range of colours. It's quite limited, and if you buy bouquet mixture from me, you'll find a lot of mauves and lavenders in it, because I've sort of throw in stuff from my breeding program as well. So it's a lot of lavenders and mauves and blues in it. I brought out a variety last year called Alison Louise, and that has so consistently has 6 flowers to a stem. It's a lovely bright mid blue. So that's actually become my favourite variety.
So I don't mean to sound creepy, but I do have your book, and I noticed in the back...
Nicole is holding it up just so that everyone can know. She's holding it up very proudly.
I noticed in the back you thank your wife for it, and her name's Alison. Did you breed that one for her?
I've been waiting a long time to breed a variety that was good enough to name after.
Oh, that's lovely.
Oh, my heart.
Achieved it now.
My heart. Oh.
Oh, that's so lovely. And it's an elusive blue colour, isn't it? Did you say?
It is. It's sort of a really bright blue with a white eye. So it's really, yeah, people who grew it this year for the first time, they've all come back for it.
It sounds lovely. Blue is one of those colours that's so hard to find in the garden, isn't it? But with sweet peas, you've got so much more of a choice.
Yeah, I would hesitate to say it's a true blue, like a gentian or a delphinium, but it's certainly a better blue than some of the blues that are around at the moment. In terms of other varieties of that type, wild swan is extremely popular. That's a white variety. You know, you're just more likely to get five or six than the others. There's a lot of good white varieties, but that's probably the best one for cutting.
I can hear our listeners' lists getting bigger and bigger for which ones they want to grow.
I still can't get over you've named one after your wife. It's really touched me.
Was she pleased with the colour?
Oh, yes, she was. She liked it. Blue's her colour anyway. So,
is it a scented variety?
It doesn't have outstandingly good scent. Mm-hmm. If it has a weakness, that's it. But from a cutting and garden decoration point of view, it's absolutely wonderful, you know. So, but then I may be biased.
we'll have to get some as well and give it a go ourselves.
I'm adding it to my list.
Give it a go and see what you think. Yeah. When people are talking to me about varieties, fragrance is the one thing that they always want to know about, really. They seem to be almost universally popular, but just occasionally. And it's probably happened about three times in the last 10 years. I will meet someone who says, oh no, I can't stand the scent of
Sweet peas.
They're not our people.
About it that, no, Nuh-uh. One or two. Mm-mm. I mean, some people are like that with lilies, aren't they?
But I think lilies have got they've got more of a domineering, overwhelming smell. Who are these people?
We don't need them in our lives.
Maybe they're just super sensitive to it, and it's just overwhelming for them.
So if we go back to the autumn sowing, I thought we could talk through just your general top tips on growing them. So you've sown them. What then? Do you recommend growing them outside or out? Did I say outside? Inside or outside? What would you recommend?
Yeah, if people go wrong from an autumn sowing of sweet peas, if people want to sow November, say, then there are two things they do wrong. One is that they mollycoddle them, you know. Sweet peas are a hardy annual. They're very happy in frost down to, say, minus five. And in fact, if my plants don't get frozen solid to the point of collapsing at some point in the winter, I'm disappointed, because they actually seem to benefit from being toughened up by a bit of cold. So so you might need a little bit of warmth to germinate them, but once they're through, get them out in the cold.
Tough love.
And actually, certainly, it tough love pays, and they could be outside for most of the winter, certainly if you're in a mild area such as...
So I'm in Cambridgeshire. Do you think I could get away with leaving them outside all winter?
Well, you could a lot of the time, yes. It's not frost that's damaging. What you need to be careful of is protecting them against strong winds. They can be quite damaging. And you do get a lot of wind, I think.
Yeah, definitely. It's been crazy here today, almost like a gale. So they need to be in a more sheltered spot then, where they can be a bit protected from the winds, but they could stay out.
Yeah, so they could be outside all winter. They They want to be in full sun, this question of giving them good light. If we've got, you know, really severe cold where it's below -6, say, or where there are gales forecast, then they want to
make me shiver just thinking about -6. No, thank you. They're not the only ones who don't like -6.
The other thing where people can go wrong, certainly at this time of the year, is that mice absolutely adore sweet pea seeds. So you do have to protect against mice, which, if you were sowing in February, is maybe less of a problem, because by the time the plants go outside, you know, it's spring and there's more alternative food around.
Once they've germinated, will the mice still go for them?
Yes, they will. Yeah, even young plants that are, say, 2 months old, they would quite happily. They've usually, there's a remnant of the seed at the base of the plant, sort of, if you like, between the shoot and the roots. And they will.
I thought I was safe once they germinated.
No, sadly not. No.
I saw in your book your mouse-proof tables. I was quite impressed with that. I think I'm going to have to look at some.
What's a mouse-proof table? Elaborate.
It's the overhang that stymies them, and you can do the same thing on a smaller scale in on a greenhouse bench if you like. If you had your plants sitting on a board, which was on top of an overturned flower pot or bucket, something like that.
Yeah.
So that, again, any mice climbing up the pot, when they reach the board, they're faced with an overhang. They can't get at whatever's on top of the board.
That is a good tip, because that's the one thing that I've been checking that there's no mice eating my seeds. But so far, touch wood, they seem to be okay.
I'm gonna have to get my drill out, and I'm gonna have to change the greenhouse. I'm just making my mental plans. I hadn't even thought about that. So those are the main two autumn sowing problems. So then, do you pinch out on autumn sowing?
Yeah, that was a big listener question about pinching.
I don't. And if you're sowing in the autumn, I would encourage you not to, because it would be very easy to have plants November or December, you nip out the tops to encourage side shoot development. And then if we have a mild January, which does happen some years, then by the end of January, your plants are ready to go out into the ground. But the soil conditions aren't suitable. So it's far better to just let them be. And what you will find that by the middle of January, they'll start to produce side shoots quite naturally. They do that anyway. And they're doing it in their own time, as it were. If by the end of January you've got any plants that aren't showing signs of side shoots, then it's safe then or later to pinch them out. So if you've sown at the beginning of January, say, by the time they're ready for pinching out, you'd be into February. It's perfectly safe to do that. You've avoided the risk of having plants ready.
And we're talking sort of Midlands, South England territory here in terms of dates. Obviously, if you're in Scotland, you'd
be
doing it later.
Yeah, absolutely. Because you're sowing later in the north or Scotland, you've gone past that date of the end of January, not pinching out before the end of January. That's fairly fixed wherever you are. So, you know, if you haven't sown till February, then obviously that's not an issue for you. You can pinch them out quite happily if you wish to. But as I've said, they will produce those side shoots anyway. It's just a question of whether you're trying to hurry them along a bit.
Jumping ahead a little bit, so we've not mollycoddled our seedlings, and we get to say April, May time. Is that the ideal time to start thinking about getting them in the ground?
No, the benefits of sowing in the autumn is that you can get them outside as soon as the ground starts, as soon as you can get on it, really, as soon as it starts drying out. So this is normally sort of early March in the south, maybe mid to late March further north. You know, if you've sown in January, you won't be able to get them out until April, and that's fine, but get them out as soon as you can.
Okay, that's a good tip. I would have been waiting until the end of April, I think, so I'll be out in March.
Well, you see, you don't need to wait because you've grown your plants nice and hard. They're frost tolerant. Even when you've planted, you don't need to wait for frosts to go because they're already toughened to that. So get them out as soon as you can. And the benefit of that is that if you're giving plants a couple of months of vegetative growth, because they will start to flower. The actual flower initiation is controlled by day length, among other things. So they will start to flower May, June time, whatever the height of plants, if you like. So by allowing your plants to grow all through March, April, May, they've had perhaps 3 months of vegetative growth before flowering. And so you've built up a really strong plant, which is how you get lovely long stems.
And then my next question is there's kind of like two parts to it, really, was around what to grow on. So last year was my first year of growing, and I tried a teepee style, and I was just overwhelmed by aphids and mildew. This year I grew on a flatter, longer, taller structure, so they grew kind of straight up rather than around a teepee, and I got hardly any mildew, but I still got a few aphids. So what are your tips, A, for what to grow on, and B, fighting those mildew and aphids?
If you're growing for garden decoration, then I think a teepee type structure can be more decorative. I like to see a clump in a garden, as it were. If you're growing for cut flowers, though, having a longer, thinner structure does give you access to it spreads the plants out, and therefore you have the ability to cut all blooms. Now, I regard the aphids and the mildew as a separate issue because they vary from one year to another anyway.
And they won't be affected by how you grow them?
Not at all, no. So the powdery mildew is worse in some years than others, depending on how hot and dry the summer is. You know, it thrives in dry conditions. Yeah. So what you need to do is keep your plants well watered, and even in really hot days, then it's worth having perhaps a tray of water at the base of the plants that can evaporate. And again, aphids. Well, this year I've not seen any aphids around here hardly. There was a few on Adelia, but basically, for whatever reason, we've had a mild winter as well. Yeah. So it seems counterintuitive, but we just haven't had that many aphids here this year. Yeah, I'm not an organic grower. I use a systemic insecticide. I spray once a year at the end of May, and that usually is all I need to do to keep aphid free. If I do get any, by July time when I'm harvesting seeds, then it's not the end of the world, because if they're carrying virus diseases, those aren't transmitted through seed anyway. Yeah.
The question I always have, so whenever I see pictures of people's amazing sort of sweet pea seed farms, you see all the colours next to each other, so the pinks are right next to the whites. And because when you grow tomatoes, I know you need something like half a mile radius to avoid cross-pollination. How does that work? How so? Could you grow all your different colours and still save seeds without them cross-pollinating? Or
yeah, very much so. Not at all. It's not a problem at all. Hmm. The sweet pea is self-pollinating.
Ah, okay.
By the time the flower opens, it's already pollinated itself. Yeah, it might explain why the flowers don't last very long, because they don't need to. They've already done their job, haven't they?
And then one of the last questions we had, and I kind of think I might know what the answer to this is going to be, is one of our listeners asked about growing sweet peas neatly.
Neatly?
Yes. I don't think it's a thing, is it? Sweet peas
is there such a thing?
Crazy. They just do their thing, don't they?
People may have seen online cordon growing, mm-hmm. where a single stem is taken off each plant, and the Japanese commercial cut flower growers have got that down to a fine art. You know, when you mm-hmm. when you look at their greenhouses, everything is neat and immaculate. And, you know, this is talking about garden decoration, though. This is really, you know, cut flower production. And the more effort you put into controlling the growth and securing it how you want it to secure, the tidier it's going to be, I suppose.
And what about the tendrils? Little curly, wispy bits.
Yes.
Would you recommend snipping those off?
Well, there is a popular misconception that they'll grow better if you remove the tendrils, and that's not true. I mean, there's no evidence that they've sort of diverted resources into producing these tendrils. So if you're growing them the plants naturally, they need the tendrils for climbing. But if you're growing them as cordons, then they do get in the way. And one thing that cordon growers will do is to remove the tendrils in order to ensure they get, uniform growth, and that the tendrils aren't giving them bent stems by either directly.
Yeah, I noticed that last year on mine, is that I tried to get as many tendrils off as I could that weren't gripping onto the structure, because they seem to grab the flowers by the neck and suffocate them, almost bend their heads and make them look ugly. So I did try and remove them a lot of the time, but it did feel like a never-ending battle as well.
Takes the joy out of it a bit.
So I think we've covered a lot. I don't know about you, Sarah, but I feel like I've, you know, what you were saying at the beginning, Roger, about learning something new. I feel like I'm actually looking forward to listening to this episode back myself and making some notes.
I've got to call my granny. She doesn't know any of this. She's going to blow her mind.
One of the things you mentioned at the beginning when we were talking about anniversary, you said it was one of your favourites, but not the favorite. I'm interested to know, what is your favorite?
Well, I think I've already told you that it's Alison Louise is my favorite nowadays. Yeah.
Oh my heart.
I love that.
Oh.
The reason it's my favorite, it's got nothing to do with the name. I've named it for her because it's my favorite, and the reason I like it is it's such a good variety, you know, in terms of its flower form and one thing or another. I just love the colour as well.
And so, do you sell that one on your website?
Yes, we do.
Excellent. Yeah. So I think I know where me and Sarah are heading in about 5 minutes' time.
Yeah. Another favourite is one called All But Blue, ALLBUTT, which is a silly name because it's cream, but it's got a blue edge to it. And it has wonderful fragrance, and it's not a Spencer, it's kind of intermediate between that and the old-fashioned type, but wonderful fragrance, prolific flowering, the stems are almost as long as the Spencers, great size and form, but terrific fragrance, so yeah.
Oh, amazing. And because the seeds you sell on your shop, am I right in thinking that they are sort of spares from the National Collection?
That is how we started off, but nowadays, you know, it's I retired early. This is just a hobby in my retirement, you know, and I think of it as a hobby that's got out of hand rather than a business. I think
that's what happens to all flower growers. A hobby starts as a hobby and then it becomes like some sort of mad obsession or a business.
I think that's going to be our slogan, a hobby that's got out of hand.
Well, it's a good one. I've lost my thread now.
I know,
really.
Sorry
there
about that. Sorry. We just took your slogan and we distracted you.
Absolutely. Great.
And then, so something to end on, I thought it might be nice. I wondered if you had any sort of words of wisdom for people, as because obviously your love of sweet peas has sort of defined a long part of your life, and obviously you've developed a love for the flowers and being in the garden. I wondered if you had any words of advice for people who are just starting out with their gardening, or and maybe just figuring out that they love something as much as you love sweet peas.
Well, I think I should issue a warning, actually.
Uh-oh.
If you're going to grow sweet peas, then be wary. Mm-hmm. They are addictive, and you will very quickly become obsessed with them.
Will you be passing the baton of the National Collection to anyone? Like, have you got any children who will also now love sweet peas?
Yes, my daughter works for me full time. I
can
do everything I do on my own. Well, my wife does quite a lot as well. Alison does, but Fran in particular is in fact, if you phone up to order seeds, she's more likely to be the person you speak to. She says that she's in charge of seeds out. And I'm in charge of seeds in. My job is to produce them, and her job is to sell them, if you like, you know. Yeah, so hopefully she will be carrying on the mantle. And she also has one of my favourite varieties named after her. It's Francis Cape, which is a lovely sort of ink blue striped one. Marvellous.
Oh, beautiful.
Very striking.
Amazing. God, it really pays to be in your family, doesn't it? Oh. Oh my goodness, I think I need to lie down, Nicole.
I mean, it's just so much information there. I felt like that was such a good chat with him, and I'm so grateful that he was so free with his knowledge. I hope that everyone listening's managed to pick up loads and loads of tips on sweet peas, because I'm raring to go. I've already planted mine. But like you, I think we need to get on his website and get that Alison Louise bought.
Oh, don't. I almost cried, Nicole. I almost cried.
I actually thought you were going to.
I welled up a bit. It's so sweet. Would you name a sweet pea after me, Nicole?
Maybe one day.
That was a no. Oh, my God.
I was thinking you might be a bit further down the list. I think Tom might be offended if I didn't name the first one after him.
Screw Tom. He doesn't care about sweet peas. Oh, my God. How dare you? I would name one after you.
Would you?
Yeah, I would.
No. Well, maybe we should have our own one, like one we do together one day. This episode is probably long enough now after everyone has listened to all of Roger's information that I just really know is going to be useful for me, never mind anybody else. I mean, isn't that the reason we started this podcast?
Yeah, basically. I'm loving it. We will be consolidating some of the information he told us, won't we, Nicole? I'm saying that because it's your homework, not mine.
And popping some of it onto the Let's Grow Girls podcast Instagram page.
No, wrong answer.
Oh.
We are... there will be a list of the sweet peas that Roger recommended on our Facebook group.
Oh, yes. Ooh. I remember now.
Ooh. We have a Facebook group.
So you need to join the group if you want to get that information.
Mm-hmm,
and
you do.
If you're lucky, I might even try and bullet point some of the notes and pop that onto the Facebook page as well. We'll see.
Yeah, I was thinking of making a little map. And putting a line and saying, if you live above here, don't even bother autumn sowing. But yeah, so his main points, like his favourite varieties and more information about how you can order from him and have his National Collection fancy schmancy Roger Parsons seeds, that will all be on the Facebook group, where you can also post and chat to other flower growers, and hopefully it'll be a nice place for us all, you know, our little flowery section of the internet. Just type in to the little search bar, just type in Let's Grow Girls, and the group and the page should come up. And join. We're not fussy. We'll have anyone. I mean, just look at Nicole. Yeah, she's making this with me, so not fussy.
No, not at all.
No, not fussy. And so I think we'll leave it at that. But we are spoiling you. Next week we have another guest.
Another exciting guest.
This one's my one to fangirl over. And let's say we both screamed when he agreed to do it. We'll leave it at that.
I think they're going to love this one too. I think we have spoiled them 2 weeks in a row with two amazing guests. But you will have to tune in next week to find out who it is.
So we will see you then. See you next week for more Let's Grow Girls.
Bye.
Adios. Did you really want to do? Do you know the words to that? Does anyone know the words to that? All I know is ba ba ba, and ba, then some ba. Mumbling. Do you really want to do?
I just want to tell you that I had enough.
Oh yeah, look, you know.
It might sound crazy, but it ain't no lie.